So good morning. We are here as a joint committee to get the most important revenue forecast that we as a state get, and that is the May forecast. And university presidents and students across the state are awaiting the news that these two gentlemen will bring us. I'll hand it off to the co-chair, the chair of the Revenue Committee, Representative Chair Barnhart.
Thank you. The Revenue Committee will come to order, and actually my members are arriving. And I would simply like to add to what Senator Deckard said is that we're really looking forward to the forecast today in hopes that we can deal with the budget issues involving higher education and community colleges. That's my hope, at least for today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And so, y'all can't see this, Dr. Baik and Dr. Kennedy, but we have a huge crowd, and the fire marshal is going to come and usher them away. So if we could ask folks to find a seat, we can get started with and invite up Dave Beck and Michael Kennedy, our state economists, to deliver the penultimate May forecast.
Mr. Chair, we now understand why you're in the Senate and I'm only in the House, using big words like that.
Penultimate May forecast. Welcome, and good to see you after 3.5 long months for the forecast that matters.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair and members of the committees, I am Dave Beck, acting state economist. Here with me is Michael Kennedy, senior economist, both of Office of Economic Analysis. We're here today to give you May economic and revenue forecast. We appreciate the opportunity. Let me first go over our process, forecast process, just a little.
Please go ahead, and they'll the elephants will
feeding frenzy.
For those who are watching on the internet, you might note that the forecast is right now being passed out, and that's the interruption. Please go ahead.
Thank you. We put out the forecast, but we are being assisted by various state agencies, including Legislative Revenue Office, Department of Revenue, Employment Department. We cannot put out our forecast without their assistance. During the process, we get input from three advisory committees, Governor's Council of Economic Advisors, Department of Administrative Services, Economic Advisory Committee, and Council of Revenue Advisors. We finalize the numbers using econometric models and ultimately using our forecaster judgment. Our office is solely responsible for the forecast. We stand behind the numbers. The numbers that we are going to put out today are our best forecast, given all the information that we have. And I'm nervous before just stand in front of you, but understanding the importance of the numbers, I'm more nervous about numbers that we are going to give you.
Well, that's confidence in stealing.
I thought it is important to review what we had assumed in our March forecast. And for that matter, we've been maintaining quite similar assumptions the past couple of quarters. We anticipated that there will be a rebound in business investment spending, and we said that global economy will stay healthy, and consumers will lend a little. Employment growth will be weak in the first quarter, but will improve after that. Personal income growth will be subdued following employment trend. But all in all, we said that we don't see a recession coming. What has happened since then? Recent developments are in line with March forecast, both nationally and in Oregon. First quarter 2007 employment gains in Oregon were better than expected. Unemployment rate stays stable. Yesterday there was an April employment numbers. We added 5,600 jobs on a seasonally adjusted basis. Consumer spending stayed strong in the first quarter, although we see some signs of weaker spending in April. Oil and commodity prices are under pressure again, but we had these high elevated prices in our March forecast already. The surprise is high gasoline price, and that we didn't have in our forecast before. Nationally, there is a significant but limited spillover from housing correction and subprime mortgage mess. One good thing going for us in Oregon is unfilled capital orders are rising, and that bodes very well for our manufacturing sector. This is the outline for our economic forecast review. We're going to look at leading indicators both for the nation and and we're going to take a look at housing market and business capital spending and global economy. All these are very important for our state economy. And we're going to take a look at some recent development in Oregon in more detail. And we're going to check our forecast assumptions and give you baseline forecast. And then we're going to talk about alternative scenarios. If you look at both U.S. and Oregon's leading indicators, they tell us that slow growth is ahead and robust growth should wait a little. So if you look at Oregon Index of Leading Indicators, the red line is the leading indicator, and the black line is six-month annualized percent change in employment. So we had a substantial slowdown in employment growth. One good thing we noticed was that in the fourth quarter, we didn't have much employment gain. But in the first quarter of this year, we saw rather healthy gains. As you know, U.S. economic growth has been slowing, and the first quarter number came in a very disappointing 1.3%, but it's in the process of being revised down. And with the slowing national economy, Oregon's economy is slowing too. So if you look at 2007 economic growth rate, it's going to be 2.1% for the nation, which is far below a trend growth rate of 3%. And the economy will not fully recover until the end of 2008. One reason for slowdown in the economy is the housing correction, of course. Home building has been very, very strong in the past 3-4 years. We could say there was an overbuilding and forward purchase of homes. Now we're paying the price. In 2007 and 2008, the housing starts will be far below a adequate or trend housing start level of 1.6 million units or so. If we look at how Oregon and U.S. housing starts, we had some bad year last year, but we're going to continue to have decline in housing starts in 2007 and early part of 2008. Of course, wood product manufacturing and building materials manufacturing were hurt badly. But there are secondary effects of this slowing housing starts. The housing sector will have negative impacts on other segments of the economy, including retail and services. Oregon's economy is exposed both to the national economy and the global economy, and Asian economy in particular. The global economy has been very strong, growing much higher than the trend growth. That promotes U.S. exports and Oregon exports. We have a good trend in the value of dollar. The value of dollar has been declining, as shown by this arrow, downward trending arrow. So there are some economic variables we're excited about when we see a decline. Inflation rate is one, interest rate is one, but the value of dollar is another. Oregon's export. We had a very good year in 2006, and increase in exports helped our agricultural sector and manufacturing. In the first quarter of 2007, we saw over 14% growth again, mainly led by agricultural products and non-electrical machinery. So capital goods exports are increasing, with the exception of computer and electronics products. We anticipate that the U.S. business investment will continue. The fourth quarter was a disappointment, fourth quarter of last year, but in the first quarter of 2007, we're seeing improvements. Factory orders are rising. Unfilled orders are rising. So that bodes well for our manufacturing sector. And at the same time, inventories are lean. So during the summer and fall, we anticipate that manufacturing will ramp up production a little. This is one of the difficult areas that we can... can decide on, actually. we consult a lot of people. We expect smaller gains in U.S. corporate profits, but the question is, will there be a correction in corporate profits? If you look at 2002 through 2006, represented by red bar, the growth of profits has been phenomenal, and that compares to overall economic growth represented by sky blue line bar rather. This is our U.S. forecaster forecast provider's forecast, Global Insight. They see slowing profits in single digits, but they don't see a correction. So we have some of that, but as Michael Kennedy will tell you, we have decided internally with the consultation of a lot of economists around that much slower profit growth is ahead of us. And unique circumstances may not last forever.
And how solid are you on that assumption? That
to tell the truth, very shaky. But the growth rate of profits in the past 4 years is just something that cannot be repeated. We had tremendous help from many, many different reasons. One is globalization, and Michael will list all the reasons why we had spectacular growth in profits. And some of the growth are already built in, and there are some downside risks to these contributing factors down the road. So we'll talk about that when we hit profit growth and our assumptions behind correction in 2008. What's been happening in Oregon? Employment growth, as I told you before, was a little stronger in the first quarter than expected. Year-over-year growth is 1.8%. We have robust sectors in leisure and hospitality, retail, and professional and business services. Weak sectors, of course, is manufacturing in general. Claims for initial unemployment benefits are running a little bit higher than last year, but it's understandable because we have higher covered employment. Unemployment rate has been stable, and we have limited fallout from subprime mortgage problem. Mortgage delinquency rate, that's over 30-day to 120-day late payment. Delinquency rate is rising slightly, but we're the second lowest among 50 states. The first is North Dakota. In the past six quarters, in the past five quarters, the U.S. delinquency rate increased about 80 basis points, about 0.8% overall, percentage point. For Oregon, we had about 20 basis point increase, about 0.2 percentage point increase. So we are faring better. Going forward, this is our forecast assumptions. We're going to see limited job gains. Consumers will finally relent, pressured by slowing job market and negative housing wealth effects and higher gasoline prices. Of course, there is a mitigating impact coming from increase in stock market wealth, but we understand that housing wealth is spread all spectrum of households, and the stock market gains will be shared not as universally as housing market wealth. Business investment spending will stay healthy for the rest of this year and next year. Global economy will stay strong. And anemic expansion is ahead of us. Some people characterize it as the Goldilocks economy. But for us, we'd like to see a little more expansion. This summer and part of fall will be weakest. Personal income growth, again, will be subdued, reflecting employment trend. We don't see a recession coming. So based on these forecast assumptions, we have 1.3% growth in employment this year. Now, that's a substantial slowdown from 2.9%. And even lower from 2005 of 3%. Economy will improve after the third quarter of this year. So next year, with that momentum, we're going to have a little higher growth. And then 2009 will stay above trend growth. Personal income growth, we can't expect the growth in the 90s, and we're closely following national trend. We have a couple of scenarios, both optimistic and pessimistic scenarios. The downside risks are plentiful, although we're not saying there are upside risks. But if we list all the downside risks, we cannot help but emphasize the downside risk. There is a danger of deeper housing downturn. We didn't see a decline in housing prices here, but if housing downturn deepens, we don't know what's going to happen. And subprime mortgage problem is affecting housing market for sure, but may spread to other segments of financial market and the rest of the economy. The elevated oil and gasoline prices are a big concern at this point. So the inflation coming out of it, the pass-through of energy prices is great. So we are worrying about inflation. And higher inflation calls for a higher interest rate. All in all, these will negatively impact business sector and consumer sector. If there is a major stock market correction, although we see the stock market being justified by price-earnings ratio at this point, this stock market correction may impact consumer spending and consumer confidence, and consumers may cut back on spending. Now, seeing the cutback in consumer spending, business firms may have less incentive to produce more or invest more. So all these downside risks need to be mentioned. Of course, we have some upside risk, mainly coming from strong global economy. And if all these downside risks don't turn out to be true in the future, then perhaps that could be. And if we have a little improvement in housing sector a little faster, then optimistic scenario may prevail. Now we have three different scenarios. The one that I gave you are baseline scenarios. Before baseline scenario, in terms of employment, 1.3% growth in 2007, followed by 1.5% and 1.9% growth. A pessimistic scenario, we're not going to have much gain in jobs in 2007 and 2008. And economy will slowly recover toward the end of 2008, and we're still feeling the impacts from slow economy in 2009. Optimistic scenario, we have 1.9% growth for 2007, and 2008 we'll see 2.2% growth. Now, personal income growth will reflect weaker or stronger employment gains depending on the scenarios. So in pessimistic scenario, we have 3.8% growth in personal income, which is not covering actually inflation and population growth. 2008 will stay weak, and 2009 we're going to see a little improvement. In the optimistic scenario, we have over 6% growth, which is better than 2006 personal income growth. And then economy will stay strong in 2008 and 2009. Now, with this background in economy, Michael Kennedy will speak to revenue numbers.
So, Dr. Back, what is the percentage chance that the pessimistic scenario, that you would get a scenario worse than the pessimistic scenario on the personal income tax side that you...
Mr. Chair, if we reflect on downside risk and upside risk, our conclusion was downside risk dominates upside risk, and the upside risk actually is very concentrated toward baseline scenario, whereas downside risk is very much spread down the line. So if we have, say, a confidence band from the mean, which is our baseline scenario, we're going to see a very depressing numbers in the downside risk. And if you look at a confidence band of optimistic scenario, we're not going to see much upside risk. So it's a distribution of risks surrounding our baseline scenario that we considered. So our conclusion was, even if we have 50-50 chance of optimistic and pessimistic scenarios, because of the fact that downside risk spreads much farther down the road, we needed to have a downside risk reflecting much lower possibility of revenue than upside risk. So confidence interval around baseline scenario is asymmetric. We have much higher risk of downside risk, and although there is slight possibility of upside risk, that's our thinking, if it makes any sense.
I think it just says, I'm glad we have a rainy day fund in place based on the probability or the asymmetric downside risk.
And that's reflected in the numbers that you've got up here too, isn't it? That your baseline is not halfway between your pessimistic and your optimistic line.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
All right, now the fun part. Michael, you want to go right to the numbers?
Chair Decker and Barnhart, members of the House and Senate Revenue Committees. For the record, Michael Kennedy with the Office of Economic Analysis, and I know there's a lot of anticipation, so let me just up front say that the meteorological conditions outside and the fiscal conditions in this forecast are roughly similar.
That helps. And the wind that you feel is the exhale from students and professors across the state.
And I'll get to the specific numbers here in a minute. It's actually a fairly subtle forecast revision. There's not a lot going on, but what there is positive. So let me start with personal income tax, just what we've seen and basically what we're acting on when we make these forecast revisions. First thing here is sort of the tracking since the last forecast, the latest forecast, and then the actual for a period of 5 months. The first thing to point out here is withholding is tracking well below the forecast, and before anyone panics, the reason for that is the change to the withholding tables, not some underlying weakness in wages and salaries. Department of Revenue, revisit this, changed withholding tables for 2007 to reflect the fact that since the last change in 2003, you had a lot of changes, increases in the federal deduction, inflation adjustments to the brackets, to the deductions, all in a sense lowering tax liability at any given level, so that if you left your withholding parameters alone, you were becoming more and more over withheld and getting a bigger refund. People have subsequently upped their withholding allowances to sort of maintain a certain refund level, but at some point the department needed to get those withholding tables back into line with actual parameters. So it turns out, now that we've done more detailed analysis, that sort of this flat year-over-year growth in withholding is really consistent with the dramatic changes they needed to make to catch up on 4 years of adjustments. So this forecast now basically assumes that withholding growth will be flat for this year and then resume normal, but at these lower levels. The real effect here is that if you just look at the withholding tables, obviously they don't change tax law. The amount of money that will come in over a long period of time will be the same. It's just when it comes in, it's really shifted $100 million out of this biennium and into next biennium. And you can make all the inferences about the kicker you want, but that's the impact is really is it's decreased the kicker by about $100 million. Estimated payments are roughly in line. It's the first quarterly payment, and that can be all over the map, so there's not a lot to read into there. The real big story here for personal income taxes right here, it's a modest April surprise. Totaling about $120 million, although there's some issues here about interpreting that directly to mean something about tax liability in 06. Really, the surprise here is last time we met, we pointed out that the fourth quarterly payment for 2006 was actually weak. And really, the inference from that historically has always been that those are, you know, high-end taxpayers making an adjustment to lower liability levels than would be implied by their first three payments. And so we actually said, oh, we revised down the 06 tax liability estimate. And that was still looking fairly accurate until about May 1st. And then in the span of about 5 days, we received about $150 million, and it completely changed the picture. And so what it basically says is there were some people in 06 who fared quite well, and it is reflected in the tax payments. What we do then is, so I'll move on to the next page here. Since we frame everything in terms of tax years for the model purposes, we sort of went back and looked at tax year 2006. Right now, all we know are the collections levels, but we make inferences from that to tax liability and income for 2006. But what we know is, and we knew this in March, withholding was up 7.3%, very strong, strongest since 2000. Estimated payments were up roughly 8%. And now we add to that basically three-quarters of all the final payments and refunds that will occur related to 2006. Payments are flat, but you have to remember there was one very large payment in 05 associated with a certain sale of stock. So this is not as really flat if you factor that out. And then refunds are up about 12.8%.
It's become like the ultimate inside joke of our revenue forecast. At least we have one.
And so the real impact here is that projected tax liability, when we infer this from the collections data, is about $5.1 billion, and that's about a 6.8% increase, which is fairly healthy. It's a little high above what you would call the long-term trend. The March forecast was 6.6. However, there were certain issues with our sort of tax return data, the preliminary finals that we sort of told you. Well, the liability estimate for 06 was revised up after we corrected some things from the new processing system. So really, this 6.8 increase on the final 05 number really constitutes more like a $50 to $60 million bump up in tax liability for 06. Now, as we've heard, sort of the expectations going forward with the economy and all of our assumptions haven't changed a whole lot, so all that really does is just bump up liability by about that much in every year going forward. It's basically what we call a level shift. And that's fundamentally the real change to the personal income tax forecast. However, this slide here is more methodological than anything, but to put this into context, you know, we have collections data for a tax year that come in roughly over the 18 months from the start of the tax year through June of the following tax year. It is then another 7 months before we have a final tabulation of the tax returns to tell us why everybody sent in all this money. What were the income characteristics? What were the tax liability? And so to kind of fill in that gap, that informational gap, what we've done in recent years is taken the returns we do have that have come in. Basically, we'll call them on-time or early returns as opposed to extended returns. And we've matched those with the prior year returns, taken those sample of people for whom we have both sets of information, and at least tried to look at what their experience was to give us some indication of what the year looked like. The real caveat here, this is 1 million returns that we've received for 06 so far, matched against the 05 returns. That'll be roughly 70% of all returns. We're going to see about another 400,000 returns, primarily extended, that will be processed between now and December 31st. So what we have here is basically sample estimates, and what we know, the caveat here is that when you add those 400,000 extended returns, you're adding a lot of income and a lot of high-income individuals. You can see these migrate. But some of these we can sort of get a read on. What I've done over here, then, recently we've engaged in some analysis of what can we say about this sample compared to what the final will be. And so over here, we've looked at 98 to 2005. We've looked at how this sample value compares to the final. And so this is the average difference for those years. And you can see across the board they're positive because, in fact, when you add those extended returns, you're adding higher income individuals. And I guess the common sense interpretation is you didn't get to be high income without outperforming the average. So you add those people in, and their growth rates tend to be higher. So here are the average, and you say, so I guess the inference here would be, so in a year like 4.6, we could expect actual wage and salary growth for 06 to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.8, give or take something. The final measure over here, then, is a measure of how dispersed those actual year-to-year values for the difference are. So the smaller this number is, it says the tighter these actual differences are from year to year. So we can say with reasonable certainty here that, you know, the actual wage and salary growth for 06 is somewhere between about 4 and 6%, and to the degree that that's any certainty at all, that's fairly wide. But that's better than, say, capital gains, where the sample individuals experienced about 11% jump in capital gains. On average, the comparison of the final number to that sample number is about 25 percentage points, up or down, up. And then the dispersion of that. So what this basically says is ignore that number because it gives you absolutely no information whatsoever about what the final capital gains number will be. You're better off looking at the payments that came in May and saying that's probably a good indication that there were some fairly healthy capital gains. But in the interest of kind of
this trying... This calculation is designed to keep economists humble.
Mr. Chair, with respect to capital gains and Schedule E, actually the big band... That's, you can just tell capital gains is just an animal unto itself, in fact. Really, the attempt here is sort of to glean anything we can. Remember, the point here is not to really say anything about 2006 per se, because we've received almost all the money we'll ever receive, but to the extent that we can sort of refine or improve our estimate of these values for 06, it improves our forecast going forward for 07 and 09, and should, to some degree, lend a marginal improvement to the forecast accuracy. So that was the point of that slide.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
You know, it strikes me that you made an inference to the comparing this to the weather, and it strikes me that forecasting based upon current returns that are coming in is like the weatherman going outside and saying, it's raining. I think it's going to rain. It strikes me as incredibly similar rather than looking out into your crystal ball and what's really going to happen over the next 3 years or something. You're saying, the returns have been coming in really strong this year, so I guess it's going to go up.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, the future values for growth are still dependent on the expectations for the economy. So when 06, yes, was stronger, it doesn't necessarily say that then we should have that same growth rate, which was fairly phenomenal, and just plug it in for every year after. I mean, we actually do have fairly subdued liability increases for 07 as a product of the forecast. It's an interesting thing. There's this two-year window where you're sort of operating on two sets of information, the dollars that are coming in, and also then what the economy is doing. And there's this window where you're actually iteratively using currently what you're seeing to make an inference about income and tax liability. And then as you go out into the future, you've got a forecast of that you then need to translate back into the collections. It's sort of an interesting process over 12 months to make that translation. You sort of go iteratively back and forth.
But to Senator Monroe's point, you are a great deal of your time is spent looking ahead and trying to make relatively good or baseline projections about 07-09 and using whatever data that we can gather today to do that.
Yeah. Chair Difford, you would say that if somebody were just to look back and say they came in really strong, so they're going to come in really strong, that's in the economic literature, it's referred to as naive expectations as opposed to rational expectations, which would presumably that's what we all, consumers and forecasters and et cetera, operate on.
And Mr. Chair, that's kind of the point I'm trying to make. We know that the housing bubble has burst across most of the nation but hasn't yet burst here in Oregon. If it bursts in Oregon, people have been spending their equity across the nation. People have been spending more than their income because they've been spending off the increased value of their homes. That bubble is bursting across the nation and hasn't yet burst here in Oregon. And it scares me. And then when you combine that to the international situation and fuel prices and some other things, I hope we will be cautious, Mr. Chair.
We operate under naive expectations.
Before you go on, I'd like another explanation of the second to the last column, the average difference column. How do you derive that number?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. So there are sample and actual or final values for, let's use wage and salary as an example. So for every year 98 to 2005, we have both a sample value of this number and a final value of this number. In each year, you difference them. So let's assume that in 06, this ultimately ends up being the 5.7 that we have in the model. That difference would be 1.1 percentage points. You have that value for each of those years, and you average it.
Thank you.
Okay.
So this is the average statement of the accuracy of the projection. And the next number, I understand what a standard deviation is simply the spread of the numbers. So the larger that number is, the more volatile the number that you're predicting is.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Now to corporate, which is a little more not as straightforward as the personal income tax changes. The bottom line forecast tracking here is about $19 million more dollars than we had projected through an estimated May number. How that breaks down, however, is almost all of the gain is related to prior tax years. It's 05 and 06, which are still turning out to be even more impressive than we already had factored into the forecast. On the other hand, you look at advance payments, which over this period, the bulk of them are the April quarterly payment, which is either really the first quarterly payment for a calendar year 07 filer or the third quarterly payment, if you will, of, say, a fiscal year filer. And so this is, you know, this 3.3% growth is really sort of in line with our expectations that this growth had to sort of come to an end. The negative relative to the forecast doesn't mean we're somehow declining. It just means we were a little over-optimistic for 07 growth going forward. So what it really says is that this expectation we've talked about quite a bit recently, you know, rampant profits growth, what's going to follow after that? Are they going to have to correct, or are they just going to flatten out, et cetera? And I'm going to go into that in more detail, but this is at least what the current collections data are saying. Much milder year-over-year growth going forward. So, again, translating that into tax year, if we look at tax year 2006, still in progress for fiscal year filers, in fact, advance payments were up about 14.8%. And when we get to this point in time here through April data that we have, that's roughly 90% of all the quarterly advance payments that corporations will pay for tax year 2006. Final payments are roughly 50% in the door if you look historically at past tax years, and they're up about 20%. The remaining variable here then is the refunds that will occur on tax year 2006. And I'm going to say something about that here on the next slide. But when we sort of translate these numbers into an estimate of tax liability for corporations for 2006, we get about $488 million. And that's $24 million above what we had in the March forecast.
And when we make our retroactive corporate tax changes, will that affect? I'm just trying to make sure that everyone in the audience is paying attention. Retroactive tax.
And we'll be here this afternoon.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, at 1 o'clock.
Stick around for that. So what I've done here is shown sort of the average historical arrival rate of advance payments, final payments, red, and refunds in yellow here for a representative tax year. So a little background on this. If, for example, this is tax year 2006, then year zero is 2006. There's your first, and year one is then the following year, 2007. So what you see is sort of in the tax year, you see your quarterly payments being made, and pretty much this represents sort of that 90% in the door by quarter six of the tax year. Similarly, some final payments. We know there are some data issues with the coding of final advance payments. That's what explains how you could have a final payment before the tax year even ends. There is some slop there that's sort of impossible to fix because of the how they actually encoded in the accounting system for Department of Revenue's purposes. So really the issue here is here we are sitting here with most of that activity. Here are all the refunds that are associated with the filing of extended tax returns in general in October. And so right now the issue here for 2006 is that you had the apportionment change. And the real question is here, the degree to which these 06 advance payments in particular were adjusted or not for that tax law change. And sort of our take right now is that if you were one of the losers, quote-unquote losers, say somebody in retail whose tax liability went up, you probably had to stay on top of that to avoid penalties. If you're one of the winners, say in manufacturing, it's not evident that you would adjust your payments down on the fly, but rather you're going to experience a larger refund at, you know, when you file your tax return. This sort of inference is made from the fact that hardly any adjustment was made for the corporate kicker, 36% credit and hardly any corporate. And it just says that your major multi-states, the large ones, their Oregon corporate tax liability is low on the radar screen of all of the things they consider, in particular federal first and whatever. So our expectation, and really when you talk about this forecast going forward, the risk for corporate income taxes is that 488 estimate currently for 2006 tax liability turns out to be something other than that, because these refunds are either smaller or larger than we currently have factored into the model. And I would say the risk is more on the downside, that they're a lot larger potentially. We do have them factored in as being larger than average because of that factor, but we could see an even greater sort of adjustment. And that's really the risk going forward. If we think tax liability is going to basically be stable from here on out, that just involves, yet again, it would be a level shift and would propagate, you know, two times that value for a whole two-year period of the budget. So,
Mr. Beck.
Mr. Chair, back to Senator Monroe's comments. This is why it's so important to understand what has happened. We have to evaluate and analyze what happened, and we have to establish some patterns. Now, it's true for refunds in terms of corporate income tax, and it is true for personal income tax. We have to know the pattern of payment over time so we have complete understanding of the history, and only then we can make good forecast. I mean, we're forward-looking, but it is very important to analyze what had happened. So that's why we just constantly look back and analyze and pound on data. So that's why Michael Kennedy wanted to just, you know, give you some snapshot of, you know, the distribution and stuff like that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. Having been a teacher of history all my life, you know, those who do not study the past mistakes are bound to repeat them. So I understand that looking at history is extremely valuable in anything that you're doing, and particularly in economic forecasts.
Thank you.
So we have 25 minutes left. I would like to leave time for questions.
Certainly. On U.S. profits, obviously, because this is a fundamental driver, we've talked about this quite a bit. The growth has been phenomenal at the U.S. level. In fact, between 03 and 06, profits doubled from $900 billion nationwide to $1.8 trillion. And so we've talked anecdotally about the factors driving that, and that's important because depending on what was driving that, your expectations going forward would be different. The temporary versus permanent factors, we've talked about this a lot. There was a very good article in Fortune in April that really delved into and sort of delineated all of these factors and sort of talked about what can we expect going forward. We've talked about some of these, but globalization has really kept labor costs down, sort of expanding those markets, those labor markets. Productivity, primarily resulting from the 90s investment and all of the high-tech equipment, really had a productivity boost. Again, less labor required for the same amount of output, so constraining costs. Decline in the value of the dollar, so long as it isn't disruptive economically, your domestic producers are facing higher priced goods coming in, so they're more competitive, and their goods shipped out for export are worth more. So it's a win-win as long as the decline doesn't destabilize the economy, which it hasn't over the past 3 years. And then debt reduction, with all these, it's sort of reiterated, or it compounds itself. They have fattening bottom lines, more and more cash. They pay down all their debt, and that reduces their debt service. In addition, when we went into sort of the decline in capital investment, you had declining depreciation values, and if you've got a five-year depreciation window, we're sitting right now in sort of the window in which you realize all these reduced depreciation costs. So they're really, you would call this the perfect storm of positive factors contributing to profits. And the real question then is, so what does that mean for 07-08? The other thing the article points out is 80% of that growth was concentrated in three sectors: energy, financial services, and consumer staples. Anyone in particular, energy is not likely to sustain the miraculous level of profits they have given their normal investment cycles and in exploration and mining. So a real expectation here is, you know, Global Insight has modest growth, but forecasters are notorious for sort of fitting a line through, you know, an average line through a highly volatile situation and finding it hard to call turning points or say things are going to change direction. Well, we don't have that problem. It is, you know, with the all the input we've had from, you know, our revenue advisory and the economists in particular on that panel and our own deliberations, it is just highly unlikely that with a perfect storm like this, that going forward, that the levels of profits that have been generated by that are somehow, you know, permanent levels that we will see. On the other hand, we don't expect a huge correction, and mild, but just historically speaking, you look back, it is never the case that corporate profits run way up and then just sit there. There's always some kind of modulation around that. And here's corporate tax liability in Oregon, but it roughly has run a similar pattern to corporate profits. But you can see even the peak in 95 at $450 million was subsequently followed by, you know, a mild correction in the years thereafter. Now you see the incredible run-up we've had. The changes in the forecast have been a revision in 06, consistent with what we saw in the collections, flat growth, which is what we're seeing currently in the payments for 2007, but that we think at some point in time, and we're picking 2008 here, that there's got to be some kind of correction as some of those factors fail, you know, to persist. Some will. Labor costs will stay low. The declining dollar is projected to decline further. Those will persist, but in the absence of a couple of the other factors, you can't...
That's someone's cell phone. Please turn it off.
Really, your expectation has to be some kind of correction, and then we have followed that with single-digit growth rates that are consistent with sort of latter stages of economic expansions. So that's really the forecast change to corporate profits, and you'll see the impact of that then when we get to the numbers, which are right here.
So, Michael, on that, and just this slide's the perfect one, is you can keep the next slide up because everyone's more interested in that one. So how do you factor in, it looks like the inklings of a new cluster are forming in Oregon. It looks like it's around renewable technology. We obviously know of one major new investment and are hearing that there could be more. How do you factor that into these, or is it just too early to say, we know one's coming, but it looks like there could be more, and that would obviously disrupt that pattern on the previous slide?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's interesting because with 100% sales apportionment, you're not going to see the same kind of impact that you had in the 80s with all the high tech in migration, because it was so weighted to payroll and property that when they did come in, there was this huge boost to corporate income taxes. You get them here now, the impacts are going to be employment, and it will then factor through to wages and other
personal
things like
income
that.
Tax.
But depending upon where those companies make sales, their actual tax liability in Oregon versus, you know, their federal taxable income would seem to be not as much of a factor in corporate income taxes.
But personal.
And that's just an off-the-cuff response. There's obviously far more detailed analysis that can be done. Well, to the numbers then. 0507, we're almost done, but not in terms of revising it up. So personal income tax, given what we've seen, the increase is about $74 million to $11 billion. You can see the $19 million here for corporate. That's pretty much in the door. That's the increase we've seen. And then just a mild revision downward. It's actually all in liquor apportionment, but it's a mild, modest change. So the net total is $92.3 million additional revenues in 2005-07. Given our former state economist penchant for nicknames for forecasts, I guess this is the KGON forecast. It's the best I could do. I'm sorry. Goldilocks is there.
Went over like my retroactivity of the corporate.
That one didn't fly. Oh, well, that's consistent with past performance of nicknames for forecasts as well. So, and normally here prior to the passage of House Bill 2707, this would all just have kicker implications. However, this 19.1 now, given the passage of that, is actually an additional contribution, projected contribution to the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. As far as the kicker, which everybody wants to know, the current personal kicker is now projected at $1.165 billion. The percentage of your tax liability for those who have filed their 06 return, 22.8% of that is going to come back to you in a check in roughly November. And the median refund is about $285 and the average is about $675. As indicated, House Bill 2707 restated the COS forecast from, or the estimate, from $500 million to $975 million, and so the corporate kicker is not going to kick. That's the mechanism by which basically the corporate kicker was rescinded. On to the most important 0709 numbers. Here, what I've tried to do is put these in terms of gross taxes before kickers, so you can really get a sense of what the structural changes and the assumptions were made to the forecast. And then you take out the kickers later, so this gives you a sense of what did all those assumptions or changes we just discussed have, what effect did they have. Gross personal income taxes for the next biennium are up about $93.7 million. Corporate income tax down 42.2. That requires explanation. In here is $24.8 million in small business credits that were in House Bill 2031. So whereas those before would have been down here in this kicker line, they're now factored in as a legislative change because it's been signed into law. So the actual sort of structural change in corporate income tax from that changed assumption about, you know, the correction is really about $17 million, and then you have the tax law impact here. Other revenues up about 13.3. So the gross change in revenues is $64.8 million. And now everybody please bear with me because all of these changes have made this chart actually quite complex. Less kicker distributions. In the March forecast, we had $1.4 billion in kickers. We now have $1.1647, which is the personal kicker. There is no more corporate kicker, so the actual change in that is a positive $241.9 that you gain back. That's the $315 that was going to go to corporate kicker in the March forecast. Now we keep it, minus the additional $73.4 that is the additional personal kicker. So net GF revenues are up $306.7 million. But don't get so excited. Add to that the beginning balance, which is up 92.3. You've got roughly $400 million in additional available resources. However, first thing we have to do here is take out the TANS expense, the money that will, and obviously that's a little lower because we have an improved revenue picture. We also have the rescinding of the kicker, the corporate kicker. So you have improved cash balance numbers there that decreased that number from 64.3 million to a projected 57.3. It's only 7 million lower because we have to remember where the impact of the rescinding the kicker is. It's later in the biennium where the credits would have occurred. So it's not as much as it would have been if you just didn't have 300 million in the general fund and you tossed it in there. That impact would be greater. Finally, now we have a new line added here, which is the distribution to the Oregon Rainy Day Fund that will occur once we finalize the corporate income tax surplus. It'll be the corporate income tax surplus certified minus the $24.8 million for the business small business credit. So right now, the projected distribution to the Oregon Rainy Day Fund is $309.4 million. When you sum all that up and make those adjustments, you get roughly $14.1 billion in available resources, and that's a net increase from March of $96.6 million. Those are true available to be appropriated for purposes funds.
Please raise your right hand and
forget to do all my little fancy things. Now to what you just referred, the risks. And as I as I indicated, the one direct, easily quantifiable risk is to corporate income tax. There's two issues there. We're currently operating off an 06 estimate that could change significantly, and that would have, even if not, if the forecast was otherwise completely right in terms of growth, that could have significant impacts. I'm talking about on the order of, you know, $20 to $40 to $50 million, maybe 80 under worst case scenario. So nothing as drastic as, say, personal. Add to that just general departures from our current economic outlook. And if you run both an optimistic and pessimistic scenario for general funds, you have here a similar asymmetric sort of risk profile to what Dave was talking about. You would get, under perfectly optimal conditions, maybe $500 million more dollars in resources. And that's absolutely optimal. Tomorrow we walk out the door and it's a whole new day. Housing sector slump is over. Everything's, you know, shiny and brand new, and we race off to the races. And the reason it's not any better than that is because we are currently sitting here atop this miraculous peak of 25% GF growth in 05-07. Maybe a way to put it is to just look at corporate and say, we just experienced a $334 million surplus in corporate income taxes relative to the 05 COS forecast. That forecast base was $500 million. Now the forecast base going for this next biennium is $907 million. The likelihood, given how corporate profits have performed and where we stand today, the likelihood that you could see another $330 million above and beyond that, I would say, is almost impossible. I'm not even sure what conditions you would have to assume. I know I'm challenging the forecast gods to prove me wrong, but I don't think anybody here would be complaining if we were talking about an additional $300 million in corporate. So that sort of gives you the idea. However, if you go on the downside and there's a drastic, you know, correction in corporate profits in the U.S., you could easily see being, say, 200 or 150 maybe, or 200 below the current forecast. So that gives you a taste for why you have this asymmetric distribution. Probably there's only a very remote outside chance that you could see, you know, $1.5 billion in lower in revenues, solely because we are also not sitting here under conditions we saw in 2001 of a stock market so horribly overvalued, of a huge, you know, run in tech investment that had to come to an end. We're sitting here more, if you were to sort of make an analogy, this feels more either like 91 or 97. Those are probably the opposite ends of the spectrum you're looking at. And neither of those were fiscally challenging, if you will. So that's basically how we would characterize it if you were to make an analogy to past periods. And in terms of the forecast changes going forward, it's roughly $100 million in additional, almost all associated with personal income tax for the future biennia. And in terms of changes, really the thing here is that this number, the sort of gross structural change in revenues for next biennium, has not changed for quite a while because the economic scenario hasn't changed for quite a while. And really the thing driving revenues sky high has been revisions to this number, the 24.3% growth. Like I said, that here's 95-97, the previous, you know, very strong year, and that was only 20.6. The other previous high was, I think, 79.81 was a 21% increase in general fund. So you're really looking at just absolutely phenomenal and ahistorical kind of performance, and the expectation is after that you've sort of got to take a breather and basically see modest growth. So are there any questions about
personal or corporate? And for lottery, Michael, just in the interest of time, we could do the two-minute. Representative Barnhart, the two-minute slots are working out for us.
The House meets at 10. I don't know when the Senate meets.
Yeah, and we'd like to leave at least a few minutes for questions. So we understand that,
Mr. Chair,
these line games work.
Guess what? Mr. Chair, here's the chart we've been looking at for quite a while now, and the amazing thing is just that on a year-over-year basis, video sales have remained here at this 15% year-over-year level, even as you see incomes out there only increasing roughly, you know, 6 to 7% over the same period of time. Video sales on a weekly average relative to 2 years ago when there weren't line games are up 50%. So, and it's got to come down sometime, and I know this is sort of the joke about forecasting. You say the same thing, eventually it has to, but I mean, honestly, it has to come down. It can't keep growing. But in our deliberations, the lottery has said each of these is really associated with innovations they've made, capital investments they've made, and it makes sense, and those are basically going to run out. They've got two more. We factored them in. Eventually it will come down, et cetera, et cetera. What does it actually mean? actually, we can ignore all this. Factors driving sales growth are that people are spending more. So the bottom line for this for this biennium, we have an increase from video lottery. Other resources is primarily interest earnings and some reversions from other agencies. $8.2 million in additional resources, $7.1 in additional ending balance, which just filters directly then over into the next biennium. $7.1 more in beginning balance. Earnings are up $41.6. That's primarily as a result of just raised base level of sales growth for video. The $35 million is an administrative savings for the current business year. Lottery is now in a position to say, okay, here were our costs, here were our revenues. We have experienced some administrative savings, and we're going to transfer them to you in our October transfer. They estimate that at roughly $35 million. So the total resources are up for next biennium for lottery, $83.7. When you subtract out the dedicated distributions, you get a net available of 55.3. So 96.6 plus 55.3, roughly 152 million lottery and general fund available resources that were not reflected in the March forecast.
And do you factor in the lower commissions to retailers that are now seem to be a done deal?
Mr. Chair, yes, they are factored in here. It is assumed that they will pass those in August. It's roughly a $14 to $15 million in addition to this next biennium because it's partial, and roughly 20 to 22 going out, an average impact of those changes. And you can see those impacts all told there. Here's the distributions, and nothing really new there. And that sums up what we have to present, and we can answer questions.
That's June 30th for all of us, the picture. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you.
Speak for yourself, Mr.
Michael,
Chair.
In the lottery forecast numbers, I know there have been some projections made about lottery proceeds in relation to the possible expansion of Oregon's anti-smoking law. I think there's a lot of debate about the accuracy of those numbers, but is that reflected here at all or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, no, because it has not been passed into law. So between now and if it were passed into law, that would be a legislative change. That would be an adjustment to the May forecast to get to the close of session forecast.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, have you been involved in making those predictions, or was that something that was just done by the legislative analyst folks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I have not been directly. I'm familiar with some of the literature and what they're trying to use in terms of other states' experience, and or then there's a lot of issues about how you can translate those things really to Oregon and the unique situation. But I am aware of, you know, the factors, and would be more probably involved when it comes to passing the true translation of, you know, those impacts into our numbers, sort of the synthesis of those two.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can have the summer off. Keep giving us good forecasts like that, and you can mail the next one in.
And we appreciate it very much. And with that, the House Revenue Committee is in recess until 1 o'clock.
And we are, Senate is done.